Nearly every village in Russia has a monument to the victims of World War II, but there are few reminders of the millions of victims of Soviet prison camps. In part two of a series of reports, NPR's Michelle Kellerman visits the industrial city of Perm, an important link in the Gulag Archipelago.
In a remote village behind metal gates and rows of barbed wire, hardened criminals are put to work. Here in this metal shop, prisoners cloaked in dark uniforms are welding steel barrels. Just next door in another workshop, they're making plywood for construction sites. This is Perm 10, a prison built by convicts in the Stalin era. The Soviet dictator sent prisoners to this camp, and many others in this region, to develop the timber industry and build a hydroelectric dam. Perm 10 has been working ever since. Through the woods, down a potholed road, another penal colony is in operation, Perm 35. That's where dissidents like the now Israeli politician Natan Sharansky and Russian lawmaker Sergei Kovalyov serve time. Kovalyov lived through tough conditions.
1976 was a very cold year in Perm, and I was first put in one of the oldest barracks. I remember the temperature outside hovered around 50 below zero.
Kovalyov's protests often landed him in solitary confinement. Retired prison official Vladimir Kurguzov gets angry, even today, when he hears former political prisoners complain about their treatment. Just outside the walls of Perm 35, he set up a one-room museum to counter what he sees as the bad press in the post-Soviet era. He says he set up the museum to show people the truth, that guards treated political prisoners with respect and by the book. Historian Viktor Shmirov, though, wants to make sure Russians aren't misled about their past. Although penal colonies no longer in use are generally destroyed, Shmirov has managed to preserve one, Perm 36.
The barracks that held prisoners sentenced to a so-called strict regime were in ruin. So I took it upon myself and thought that this should be preserved. Let future generations look at it and let them decide whether they need this as a reminder.
Perm 36 is now the only Soviet labor camp that can be visited by the public. In a small exhibit room, visitors are greeted with somber music as they look at artifacts from the prison and gaze at photographs of both the victims and perpetrators of Soviet-era crimes. Perm 36 was one of the last camps to hold political prisoners, like Ukrainian poet Vasily Sus, nationalists from other Soviet republics, and a Lithuanian man whose crime was translating books by Gulag survivor Alexander Solzhenitsyn. The guides walk you through the maximum security zone where political prisoners were held up until 1987. Prisoners were allowed to move only from their small cells to workshops across the hall. Their only time outside was in a 4x4 exercise yard with barbed wire overhead. The Perm 36 Museum also gives visitors a view of what life was like in a totalitarian system outside the prison walls. Films show the military parades and the propaganda that held the Soviet Union together. The message is direct and vivid, yet 15- and 16-year-olds who visited this museum last fall came away with mixed impressions. One student, Eric, didn't know the names of the dissidents before he visited Perm 36, and now he's fascinated by the topic. It was difficult to go there and see what happened to people, he says. All this was kept secret for so long. It was scary. His classmate Galia was more accepting of the past. Maybe in those days it was necessary to arrest people, she says, explaining that the Soviet government was trying to defend itself. Former political prisoner Kovalyov recalls an encounter with another young man who's so used to living in a relatively free Russia that he couldn't believe people were once put in prison for writing books.
There is
hope in this, because this kid truly believed a person couldn't be jailed for writing literature. But it's also dangerous, because it means he doesn't have any real sense of history and doesn't have immunity from Marxist ideas.
The way history is taught in Russian schools depends mainly on individual teachers. Nikita Akhotin of the human rights group Memorial says the councils that approve school textbooks are often stacked with old communists. As a result, he says, the spin on history is not so different from what it was in Nikita Khrushchev's era, the post-Stalin thaw.
As a rule, you'll see Khrushchev's conception of history in most textbooks. Lenin was good, or at least a major political player, because he was the founder of the Soviet state. Stalin was bad and the purges unfair. Every now and then, they also mention that the collectivization of the peasants was bad. And that's it.
He'd rather students learn that the whole system was bad, and that Lenin laid the foundations for this. Alexander Yakovlev, who heads a government commission rehabilitating political prisoners, agrees.
Stalin did no more than Lenin with respect to repression. Executions began already in May of 1918. In 2 or 3 months beginning then, 3,000 priests were executed. They were shot because they refused to attend May Day celebrations during Holy Week. In the Soviet era, more than 300,000 priests were killed, and Lenin started this.
But you won't find that in school textbooks. Instead, the message going out to the younger generation is mixed. President Vladimir Putin has brought back the Soviet national anthem, arguing that Russians must not forget the achievements of the Soviet system, like the successes in the space race. Otherwise, he warned, our grandparents will feel they lived in vain. His message hits home with the school kids in Perm, who seem to feel there's no need for anyone to apologize for the sins of the Soviet past. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Perm.